Breaking news, deadly church shooting. Tragedy in Charleston. At least 9 people killed overnight in a massacre in an historic black church.
It is unfathomable that somebody in today's society would walk into a church when people are having a prayer meeting and take their lives.
You took something very precious away from me. For me, I'm a work in progress, and I acknowledge that I am very angry.
Every fiber in my body hurts, and I'll never be the same. But may God have mercy on you.
I do believe this was a hate crime.
Sometimes when I look at my girls and what they've, you know, they won't have the father-daughter dance. They won't have daddy to walk them down the aisle. I think about them and their future and what they're missing out.
I had faith, that's why I'm still here. I prayed under that table and he left me here.
That's what makes the story so much more painful, when you get to hear their names and see who they were as people and the lives that they've touched and how people feel about them. It's heartbreaking to see this story.
You hurt a lot of people, but God forgive you, and I forgive you.
You know, I forgive you, my family forgive you.
We are the family that love built. We have no room for hate, so we have to forgive.
Emotional words following the massacre at Mother Emanuel 5 years ago. It's a day I will never forget. With all that's going on, the racial tensions, police reform, the death of George Floyd, it was a time of great tragedy. But South Carolinians of diverse backgrounds came together to pray and to heal. The family members of the victims forgave the killer. Looking at that example actually gives me hope for this situation that we're going through right now. I thought this is how we should start off my new podcast, Opportunity, with Tim Scott. I sat down with the current pastor of Emmanuel AME, Reverend Eric Manning, to reflect on that tragic day and the aftermath. Take a listen.
Well, thanks for taking time to be here with us.
Well, thank you again for coming in, and thank you for all the work that you continue to do for us. Really appreciate it.
It's a blessing to do it. I tell you, I remember Wednesday, June 17th, 5 years ago, like it was yesterday. I hear that a lot. But for real, it was like it was yesterday. For me, I was in Washington having dinner with Trey Gowdy, and I left dinner and went to my apartment, sitting on my bed, and my phone rings, and it was Charleston County Sheriff's Department saying that there was a shooting, Mother Emanuel. And so instantly, I texted Clemente and said, I heard there was a shooting. Are you okay? And I still have that text on my phone. And I took pictures of it just in case I lost my cloud or memory or everything. And I remember texting him one more time because I didn't get a response. And then Mitch Lucas, number two guy at the time at the Sheriff's Department, called and told me that it was not just a shooting. And he went through the 9 lives that were lost. And it was devastating, to put it, say nicely. My grandfather went to church at Moore Street Baptist Church, my mother's side of the family. My dad's side of the family, Uncle Joe, was the only one that stayed in Charleston. Uncle Joe was a member of this church for over 50 years. Father of the year many, many years ago. And I have been in this church several times before, frankly, before politics, to be honest with you. And Clemente was the first guy that when I was announced to be the next senator for South Carolina, he was the first person to call me senator. And so we had a a good relationship, and he and I were covering Jasper County in his state Senate district, and in my new Senate district, of course, the state. So we were going to do some work together on trying to bring more resources to the folks who needed it the most. Then, of course, he called me right before the deal there, and wanted just to talk about, you know, President Obama, and took us to the inauguration and for President Obama. It was just like a cascading of events during that one time, and then to have another cascading of events where I can't catch him, can't talk to him, can't find him the next time. And so I'll never forget where I was, and I'll never forget the pit in my stomach and the almost nervous energy that you can't figure out what's going on. And it took a long time for those two calls from the Sheriff's Department to happen.
Yeah. And then, of course, that evening, I remember it as well. From a personal perspective, we had already suffered a little bit of trauma that day. We had a boxer who had been with us for years, and we had to make a decision to put him down. So the family was kind of hurting from that. And then my daughter comes in the room and says, "There's been a shooting." And I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "There's been a shooting at Mother Emanuel." And I said, "No, it can't be, because my phone would have rang." And I would have, because I was pastoring in Georgetown at the time, mm-hmm. and I was considered one of the lead pastors in the state as well. And then my phone rang. And it was Representative Carl Anderson. Mm-hmm. And he told me, he said, "Just stay put. We'll get some more details to you as quickly as we can." And immediately began to pray. And then phone rang a little bit later, and he told me that Herman Pinckney was one of them. It was one of the nine that was actually murdered. And at that time, we just, my wife and I just prayed for the families and prayed for the situation, and knew that the following morning I would have to be here. Early that Thursday morning, woke up and got dressed as quickly as I could to get down to Charleston. And I remember the drive. The drive was, usually there are cars on the road, but there weren't many cars on the road that morning. And it would just seemed as if there was the air of what we had known before mm-hmm. was just gone. Yeah. And our presiding elder, Sandy Drayton, at the time was in the hospital just having knee surgery. And I reached out to him and told him I'll be in Charleston and that we will do whatever needs to be done. But it was just utter disbelief. You think about it in the 1960s, of course, during the Civil Rights era. You could almost expect something like this,
yeah.
But not now.
Yeah,
and definitely not here. So the entire AME church just was like a gut shot, so to speak. And we rallied there at Morris Brown. I remember that day. I remember people just coming in. You were there, of course. Governor Nikki Haley came in, and I had the bishops of the church were there. And it was still like, we can't believe this has happened.
Yeah.
And even as we were, I was thinking about our discussion today. I was thinking about Reverend Pinckney's the wake here, and then as well as his funeral services. And again, coming down. The roads were kind of just bare. And it was just, again, can't believe this is happening.
Yeah, I remember they, I had the same feeling, honestly. I was thinking through the wake, the funeral, and then, you know, all the other funerals I attended, the wakes. Surreal. Yeah, I oftentimes wonder the real definition of surreal. And you know, there are moments, man. I think 9/11, 2001, I know exactly where I was. And I can't say I have many of those moments in my life.
Sure.
I'll have literally three or four moments. One, when my parents divorced at 7 years old, 9/11. Then the sitting on my bed, waiting on Clemente to return the text. And then that whole week, it was a bizarre feeling. I can remember, but not really. It's like I was not sitting. I was literally sitting here and here for most of the services that happened in this church. But it's almost like I'm looking down on it. I can't remember living through it. I just remember being almost in a stunned position. And then it was Reverend Goff called me up to speak on a couple of occasions. And I just remember thinking to myself, and if not for the grace of God and a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, I would have been empty. And I contrast that to the Wednesday week when I was getting ready to go on the floor of the Senate and make some remarks. And I talked to Daniel Simmons Jr. about what would he say? And he was not empty. He was full. And he had an optimism and a hope that almost depressed me. Because I thought to myself, you know, what kind of faith is this? And it's the only faith, not just Christian faith, but specifically faith under pressure. He exuded a confidence in Romans 8:28. He exuded a confidence that only comes from having gone through something for the last 7 days that I can't imagine what he went through. And there was some proof positive that God was not finished with this situation yet.
Sure.
And that's what he told me. He literally said, I said, sir, Daniel, tell me what you want me to say when I go out there. He said, remind them that our God is for real. Remind them of Romans 8:28, that somehow, some way, all these things will work together for good for those who love God and call according to his purpose.
Sure.
I was stunned. I'm still stunned, to be honest with you. It wasn't, you know, cast all your cares upon the Lord. It wasn't whatever things are pure and lovely and a good report. It wasn't Matthew 5:44, which I quoted several times along the way, reminding me of the goodness of God in the land of the living. It was this expectation that something powerful was coming out of the situation. And that was in the backdrop of something significant already coming out of the situation, which was 36 hours later. And the forgiveness that flowed through the work. My sister-in-law's Korean, and her brothers are in Korea. And on the front pages of the Korean newspapers and in the news stories in the Korean TV stations was this undeniably unbelievable act of forgiveness that rocked and stunned the world.
Yes. Yeah, and that, of course, was one of the things that I remember. Of course, now I've been able to develop a personal relationship with Reverend Anthony Thompson. I consider him a good brother, a good friend. And I remember when I first met him, of course, after coming to Mother Emanuel, June 21st, 2016, we had an opportunity to sit down and talk. And as time progressed, I realized that for him, that forgiveness was real. You know, it wasn't, you know, a lot of times people are quick to come out and they'll say they forgive. But for him, it just became a lifestyle. And it impressed me so much, even still to this day, because he didn't have a form of godliness. And deny the power of God, but he had a power of God. And he talks about the time when the power of God overcame him that day at the bond hearing. And he just knew unequivocally that God was going to do something miraculous here. And he did, right? That wonderful act of forgiveness caused the world to take notice. And in a time, even in times such as these, we still need to remember the act of forgiveness, the act of love that permeated from the bail's bond hearing at that time. Absolutely. When the family started speaking. Remember with Atlanta's daughter, Nadine, starting, and then it just continued. But then the reality is as well that even as I reflect over forgiveness and pastoring and leading this congregation, many people are still in different spaces. And I think one thing that I've learned and I continue to learn is that we have to be patient with everyone, because at times forgiveness will come quickly for others.
Yes.
And at times it may take a period of time. And I've learned to just say in whatever state anyone is in, it's okay. To validate their feelings and to be patient with them and to minister to them. And even reflecting upon my the first Sunday serving here as a pastor, Mother Emanuel, and I have this strange characteristic of always being honest to the best of my abilities. And I remember the first sermon was from Psalm 23. And I said, I don't know how to lead this congregation. I really don't. Mm-hmm. I said, but I know that God knows how to lead this congregation. And if he led me here, then he'll lead us through this together.
Amen.
And for the past 4 years, through the trials, through the ups, through the downs, through the good, through the bad, God has continued to lead us. Mm-hmm. And all we can continue to do is just humbly follow him.
Yeah.
And share with others that it's not about me, it's about the kingdom of God and what we could do mm-hmm. to advance, and share with others that same ministry of forgiveness, of healing, of dignity, of mutual respect, and meeting each other at the very basis of our humanity. I think when we can do that, then the world becomes a better place.
100%. I'll say without any question, one of the most thrilling parts of the aftermath was how incredible the response was because of the leadership of Mother Emanuel. Mm-hmm. I mean, I brought a group of bipartisan legislators, Congress members, Democrats, Republicans, senators, to here along with Congressman Clyburn, who co-led the trip, to talk about reconciliation. And I remember the words from some of the family members who said, yeah, they're not all on forgiveness yet. They're struggling with forgiveness some, but overwhelmingly they have embraced forgiveness. But people get there in different times.
Right.
I have had a heart filled with forgiveness and anger about that situation and other situations. And frankly, unfortunately, it appears that we still have reasons to have a lot of forgiveness in our hearts if you look around what's happening even today. And to see the poster child, the champion, the clear example of what it means to live in forgiveness and even to walk in forgiveness, which doesn't always mean that your heart's filled with the mushy kind of love. It means that your heart's filled with that love that's a commandment, that is obedient. I don't know that how you feel is always forgiveness, but you got to have it anyways. And And I think we should be optimistic about our future because we have such powerful, biblically based examples of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And that's really important.
Yeah, it is important. I think even like you were saying, Senator, if we can just get to a point where we can embrace, right? And even as I share with others wherever I go, I just always say, let us meet on the basis of humanity.
Yes.
If I can just get you to see me as not a Republican, not a Democrat, not a black man, not a white man, not an Asian man, just another human being, then maybe we can find that commonality with loving our neighbor, whomever our neighbor may be.
Yeah.
And then helping each other to make a difference for the least of these.
Yes.
Because if we can do that, then prayerfully, we can become a better people.
Absolutely.
A better nation and better communities. That's even as we draw closer to year five. I always just say, where can we be? And one of the members of Mother Emanuel says it so prophetically well. He says, I just want to be a better human being today than I was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And when he said that the first time, I said, huh. But then he said it the second time. And every time we talk about certain things, he says, you know, I might just want to be better today than I was yesterday. And I thought about that and said, if we could all just make a decision to be better today than we were yesterday. I made mistakes yesterday.
Absolutely.
Don't get me wrong, even as serving Mother Emanuel as her pastor, I've made mistakes. But it wasn't intentional. I've always wanted to make sure that we did the right thing. And realistically, at times, it seems like this was a lonely journey. Because there's no one else to really talk to about how to lead a congregation through these type of dramatic events. But Rabbi Jeff Myers and I, of course, from the Tree of Life Synagogue, become best friends. And he and I talk. And, of course, he's a survivor, but he's also now leading the synagogue.
Yes.
And we talk about the struggles. We talk about the reality of the pain. And then I'm always quick to remind people that I was not here immediately following. In fact, I came here a little bit over a year, just a couple of days over a year.
Yep.
Because I don't want anyone to ever think that I'm coming for grandiose or for grandstanding. When realistically, like I said before, it's not about me.
Mm-hmm.
It's always about the kingdom and what we can do to help others along the way.
Well, maybe that's the way forward for our nation and ourselves, which is to try to be better tomorrow than we were today and try to define better together.
Yeah.
Part of I serve on the Holocaust Museum Council, and I try to dig into a little history from a Jewish perspective, from a biblical perspective. They had the four centuries the Jewish people were in bondage, in slavery. And I just think to myself, you know what? Someone somewhere, led by the divine spirit of the living God, made a decision to take a people and move them forward, just a little bit, and then forward, just a little bit. And sometimes that causes tension. Progress doesn't typically happen during the good days. Progress typically happens when the world and the nation and ourselves are under tension. Whether that's working out in the gym, if your muscles aren't under tension, they're not growing. I don't think that works with ice cream at the table, but I've tried my best to put tension on the tummy, but that doesn't work either. So what I've tried to do is realize that tension is a necessary component to growth. And it seems like that's true in spiritual growth. It's one of the reasons why I think if you look at Matthew 25, 21, well done, my good and faithful servant. Well, what precedes it and what comes after it is these groups of people that need specific and unique help. And having that reality in the midst of this scripture I mean, it's my responsibility starts with the least of these.
Right.
And works its way up. It doesn't start at the top, works its way down. I start at the bottom because that's where I started. Single parent household, living mired in poverty. So I think God allows us to go through something so that in our own way, we are trying to make it better today than it was yesterday. And that's my goal. And I think if there's a place for us to end, it's really around why you're optimistic about our future, why I'm optimistic about our future. I'm optimistic about our future, A, because of my faith. Without it, nothing else seems to have meaning to me. B, because of the people that I keep running into who've gone through excruciatingly painful situations, and they come out hardened like gold. And so I'm confident that the best is yet to come. And I'm confident that I can play a role in it. It may be the toe. You might be the heart. Maybe the Lord says, son, not a toe, just a nail on the toe. Whatever role I got to play, I want to play it 100%. And that's why I'm optimistic about, in spite of all the misery and challenges, I see more abundance, more fruit, more love. And it makes me more patient because I know it takes a lot longer than I thought it would ever take to see progress happen.
Yes, most definitely. Most definitely.
Any closing words from you, sir?
Well, I think you captured it very well, Senator, the tail end there. What we do for the least of these, right? And then everyone has a part to play. For such a long time, people have always said, for such a time as this, you are. And I said, well, God bless you, thank you. And because I never see myself as somebody who is meant for or destined for greatness, whatever the case may be. All I want to do is just be God's humble servant. Mm-hmm. And do my best to continue to lead, not just this congregation, other people that God has assigned to our hands. But it's very important to make sure that we always point our hearts and our minds to the one who is able to keep us from falling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if we can do that, then we'll always be able to, as Psalm 121, we'll always be able to look to the hills, knowing where all our help is coming from.
Yes.
All our help will come from the Lord.
Yes.
And if we could just do that, if we can just walk together, as the old Negro spiritual, walk together, children, don't we get weary? There's a great camp meeting, the promised land. We will get there together.
Yes.
If we continue to hold each other's hand, if we continue to hold each other up, if we continue to just love, not a superficial love, but a love that transcends, that helps us, that causes us to want to see a better tomorrow, then we'll be good.
Awesome. Well, maybe we can do it together.
We always want to end on a positive, uplifting note. Romans 8:28 says that we know that all things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. Like I said, I am confident that the best is yet to come. We have an opportunity to learn from the great things that happened after the shooting, the love, the forgiveness, the unity.
Now every pew at the Emmanuel AME Church is full as that congregation comes together inside the building for the first time since 9 people were shot and killed 4 days ago. You can see
this act of terrorism, racism, bigotry was the act of one individual who wanted to create a race riot. What they found out is that our faith was greater than fear and that love will always overtake hate. We pulled together to make sure that how we responded to evil was not with evil.
It's this love that will move us forward and close the racial divide that exists in this country. I'm working on legislation, but it is going to truly take all of us to move forward. God bless you. Stay tuned.
I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see.